Good evening. My name is Dean Kilberg. I'll be chairing the Committee of the Whole meeting this evening. This is Tuesday, May 28th. I'd like to welcome everyone that's in attendance this evening. First order of business would be attendance. Let the record show that everyone is in attendance except Alderman Marks. Alderman Vogelsberg will be joining us by phone. First item of business is consideration of the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk are considered to be routine by the City Council and will be enacted by one motion. There will be second. Moved by Singer, seconded by Brown. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Vogelsberg, aye.
Vogelsberg, aye. That's yep. Unanimous. Item four, items of business for this evening. First item of business is item A, recommend approval of request by Geneva Running Outfitters Fox Valley Marathon Test Runs, use of public parking lot at Hamilton and 2nd Street, July 20th and August 18th. And then I think that they'll also be gathering and using some of the lawns in the immediate area there on the 23rd of June as well with the neighbor's consent. Is there a motion to approve
so
this
moved.
Item? Moved by Flanagan, seconded by Cummings. Discussion. Any questions of any of the aldermen? We have Mr. Ott with us this evening, and we'd welcome you to the podium. If you'd please give us your name and address.
My name is Eric Ott. A business address is 221 West State Street. Home address is 32 McKinley Avenue in Geneva. You explained it perfectly. There's three test runs, which we get the opportunity to host for being a sponsor of the race, of which are June 23rd, July 20th, and August 18th, all at the ripe time of 6 a.m., of which the first and third runs are on Sunday mornings. The second run is on a Saturday morning. And talking with businesses that are next to us, behind us, and as well as the Geneva Methodist Church that's on Hamilton, they're completely fine with it. I was just went over there today and was chatting with them as well. And just FYI, hey, we're going to be here at 6 in the morning. They said, okay, we won't. It's just basically runners gathering who are signed up for the Fox Valley Marathon to go and run the course, which runs on the Fox River Trail. We'll be there providing support in terms of providing bathrooms. If people need to buy stuff within the store, I forgot my gels or something like that, and that's pretty much it.
These will probably be training runs of maybe, 8 to 14 miles?
The first one will be 10 miles, the second one will be 14, and the last one will be 18, and that sits roughly a month before the event.
Great. So this will be a couple hours,
yep.
And you're looking at maybe somewhere between 150 and 175?
Correct. And all we are doing is providing a spot to meet, and because there's so many, we felt inside of our store wouldn't be appropriate. So, and everything else is being run, and these are all people who are signed up and registered for the Fox Valley Marathon. So.
Great.
So, yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Singer.
Is there a concern that the agenda does not indicate a June 23rd event?
That is not being... That's there's private parking space. The concern was from the city that because that's the last day of Swedish days, that wouldn't be appropriate to use the parking area there. That's public. There are spots adjacent directly behind stores on West State Street, directly behind our store, that are private, and they're allowing us to use those spaces in the morning for that day.
Thank you.
I think your run will be over with well before the parade starts, I would assume.
Hopefully, if it takes them any longer to do that, then
we're in
they
trouble.
Probably should look at next year to do the race. So.
Great. Thank you for coming tonight and sharing your plans. Are there any other questions, any comments from the audience? If not, I take it we're prepared to vote. Those in favor of approving this request signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Vogelsberg, aye.
9-0.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Item two, recommend approval request for use of Fulton Street parking lot by St. Mark's Church Car Wash, June 15th, 2013. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Brown.
Second.
Seconded by Bruno. Any comments? I think it's pretty clear. Anyone in the audience would like to comment? This is part of the lease agreement that we have with St. Mark's relating to that parking lot. There aren't any questions. I take we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Holzberg, aye.
Carries 9-0. Item C, recommend approval of request by Geneva Chamber of Commerce for Battle of the Bands event and use of 3rd Street, June 17th, 2013. Is there a motion to approve?
Second.
Moved by Maladra, seconded by Flanagan. Discussion. Any comments? Okay. Any aldermen have any questions? Ellen?
I just want to clarify, it's from the Park District. It's on the Chamber's stage, and it's part of the week's activities, but the request is actually Park District.
Maybe it's correct on the one I was given tonight. Let it show that it's the request from the Park District rather than the Chamber of Commerce, that they'll be providing the insurance and everything else that goes with it. Any questions from the audience? This will be 8 bands from 3 to 10. They'll be using the 3rd Street stage. And again, this is a Park District request.
Sounds like it's expanding. 8 bands from 3 to 10. Wonderful. And this, I know this event is becoming popular, so
it's good.
Big news.
Great. I take we're prepared to vote then. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Opposed, aye.
9-0. Item D, recommend approval request by Geneva Public Library Digital Bookmobile to close portion of 2nd Street for Bookmobile event July 22nd, 2013. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Moved by Flanagan, seconded by Maladra. Any comments from the aldermen? Anyone in the public would offer any comment? This will be the essentially the closing of South 2nd between 2nd, the 2nd Street Alley and James Street between 10 and 6 on the 22nd. I think we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Holzberg, aye.
Let the record show 9-0. Item E, recommend approval of special event Class E liquor licenses for Swedish Days June 18th to 23rd, 2013. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Brown, seconded by Maladra. We have 5 special event liquor license requests, and this would be from the American Legion Post 75, Grotto Italian Tapas, Sergio's Cantina, Chianti's, and Fiora's. And again, the dates vary slightly, but essentially they'll all be subject to the same inspections and compliance requirements. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
We have that. Okay. Thank you. Discussion? Any comments from the public? If not, I take we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, I have to excuse myself from this vote. Okay. As much as I'm a member of the American Legion.
Okay. I'll let the record show we have 8 in favor, 1 abstention. Item F, recommend draft resolution granting easement from the Shodine Family Property Company, LLC, for utilities at Dodson Townhomes. Is there a motion to approve? Moved by Maladra.
Second.
Seconded by Simonian. Discussion. This relates to South Street and 2nd Street, easement for electricity and sewer services. Any comments? Any questions? Anyone in the public care to offer any comment? I think we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The record show 9-0. Recommend draft resolution awarding bid authorizing execution of contract with BG Concrete, Inc. in the amount not to exceed $50,000 for 2013 sidewalk and curb maintenance program. Is there a motion to approve? Moved by Maladra, seconded by Cummings. Is there any discussion? Anyone in the public offer comment? I'm sorry. Dorothy?
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you say not to exceed, but yet the bid award was for $29,490.
Okay, Mr. Dinges will comment on that, I assume.
It should be not to exceed $50,000, which is our budgeted amount. What we'd like to do is we get our initial.
Oh, and then you end.
And then we, throughout the rest of the construction season, if there's more that pop up, and there always is, we would like to be able to address those at the same time.
Thank you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I may
follow up
on that question by Alderman Flanagan. If we were really going to keep up with all the sidewalks in town that are being thrown up by tree roots and everything else, would $50,000 be a little bit on the low side from what we should be budgeting per year?
Yes.
So even at $50,000, we're probably falling behind a little bit.
Yes. We're actually doing pretty well. I mean, there's trip hazards out there, I'm sure. But every year we do a program where we're replacing sidewalk. We also have been doing either the cutting or raising of sidewalks.
Well, the grinding has helped us catch up a little bit, right?
That has helped out a lot.
Cost effective.
We've actually gone through the whole town once, and now it's a matter of starting the cycle again. And this year we actually did, we had some areas where we could actually pump in, basically pump a foam in the, you know, underneath the sidewalk to raise the sidewalk to level it off again instead of cutting it.
Is that a new technique again?
It's they've used it on other foundation slabs and stuff like that. There more and more contractors are being able to do it for sidewalks, so we tried a little section and it worked well, so we're going to start implementing that as well.
And that'll all come in under this $50,000.
Yes.
Thank you.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Singer.
You indicate here that PG concrete work has been good. How do you qualify that, sir?
They've worked for us in the past, and they've completed the list on time and within budget. So we find their work acceptable.
Isn't there a more fine position you could take other than good? I'd like to see excellent or the best or something in that respect.
I don't know that it's excellent, but I mean they do a good job.
You're pleased with their
yes.
work. That's important. Yeah. Thank you, sir.
Let's not let the perfect be the enemy of the good.
Okay. I agree. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
They are all
that's right.
That's right, and they are qualified. We do not feel that there's anything there to disqualify them.
You got that clarified?
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I take it we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Oldersburg, aye.
9-0. Item H, recommend draft resolution granting easement at 810 East State Street. This is the site of the Valley Animal Hospital as part of the 2013 underground cable replacement project.
Second.
Moved by Maladra, seconded by Flanagan. Any comment or discussion as relates to this? I take it we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Oldersburg, aye.
9-0. Item I, recommend approval of certificate of completion, Geneva Bank and Trust. Staff has inspected the electrical installation at Geneva Bank and Trust and found it to be satisfactory. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Brown.
Second.
Seconded by Bruno. Any comments? If not, I take we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
9-0. Item J. Recommend approval of certificates of acceptance. These would be for Fox Valley Institute of Medicine, Dotson 8, Roquette, Living Well Cancer Center, and Millard Refrigerated. And again, this would be staff has inspected the electrical installations at these five facilities and found them to be satisfactory. Any comments? If not, I take we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
We need a motion.
Oh, I thought we had one. I'm sorry. we need a motion. Maladra?
Second.
Cummings.
And may I point out that these are all businesses in town that have done a wonderful job of upgrading the facilities, building new facilities, and they look really nice. And I think the town can be proud of some of the businesses in town, the way they've conducted themselves and kept their facilities looking really, really first class.
I think we'd all agree with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, now we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Mr. Guy.
Opposed? 9-0. We'll move on. Item K, recommend draft resolution awarding bid and authorizing execution of contract with DeMar Tree and Landscaping Services, Inc. for the 2013-14 city tree trimming. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Flanagan, seconded by Cummings. Discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Singer.
Perfect.
Sure.
I didn't see any mentions of being good here.
This one's a little different.
Yes, it is.
We have had some issues with DeMar in the past.
Uh-huh.
However, after review with the city attorney, we don't feel that there's enough there.
Okay.
We are going to closely monitor the contract, and if we run into issues, we'll be coming back to cancel the contract. So that's kind of where we're at. We're going to closely monitor it. Yeah. This is for electrical, just to clarify, for electrical trimming.
All right. Some of these issues stem from the fact that occasionally people complain when they see their favorite tree in the backyard get haircut.
Part of it is customer relations, and we've had issues with them in the past.
Mm-hmm. No. Everyone hates to see their favorite backyard tree get a haircut, but it is necessary to minimize the outages that we've seen recently.
Correct.
Is there any
Alderman
penalty?
Flanagan.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there any penalty for canceling the agreement?
No.
Contract?
No.
And
we just have to
just to give them notice?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And it's actually a multi-year contract. We're doing it for the 1 year with the option to be able to move forward depending on how this year goes.
Estimated cost is about $98,000. Is that comparable to last year?
We've maintained that budget for the last 4 years.
Okay.
Basically, what we do is we have a route to cut. Every year is about a third of the system. By the way, I'm Mike Buffington, Supertel Electric. We hold about $16,000 over, such as this year when the storms hit, so we can get in and clean up the storm damage. Any questions?
Any questions, Mr. Buffington?
So storm damage comes out of this same contract then?
If we can manage it, we do. And if we don't have storms, we use up to get ahead of the next year.
Thank you.
Any other aldermen with any questions? Anyone in the public would like to address them? If not, I take it we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Mr. Guy.
9-0. Next item L, recommend draft resolution awarding bid and authorizing purchase of 2013 replacement computers from EDC in the amount of $30,286.
I will move, even though my copy says it's a draft resolution, I will still move that we accept it. Somebody missed, there's a scrivener's error here in the online copy.
Where is it?
Moved by Brown, seconded by Maladra. Any comments of Mr. Collins? If not, anyone in the public would like to speak to this? If not, we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed? 9-0. Item 11, recommend draft ordinance establishing application fees for planned commission hearings related to Title 11 zoning. We have Mr. Unch with us, and once we have a, we're going to just work on preparing a draft resolution this evening. Then, do we need a motion to consider? Moved by Maladra.
Second.
Seconded by Simonian. Okay, Mr. Unch, if you'd give us some background on what you're proposing here.
Just some quick background. As you know, the Planning Division of the Community Development Department works with the Plan Commission in processing applications for zoning map and text amendments, preliminary and final subdivision plats, special use requests, formal site plan reviews for proposed commercial developments, and what we have been observing is that we expend a certain amount of dollars in terms of staff time, and we also have third-party costs associated with the review of these matters by the Plan Commission. It's been 1990 since we've looked at our fee structure for charges for these various types of reviews. And so what we've done is Mark Herman, who's our planning intern that works in the Community Development Department, he's been a student at NIU in the Masters of Public Administration program and just completed his degree. He's graduated, and he's continuing to work for us a short time.
Introduce him so we can congratulate him, by the way.
That's right. And Mark has done a great job of reviewing our costs both in terms of staff costs and third-party costs. He's done a review of what other municipalities are charging in terms of these various types of fees, and he's got a recommendation that he'd like to share with you. He'd like to run through a few slides just to briefly give you an overview of what we've taken a look at. So I'd like to introduce you to Mark Herman.
Thank you, Mr. Unch.
You have center stage.
So, as Mr. Unch has already introduced me, but I am Mark Herman. I'm the community development intern here in the city of Geneva. And we have reviewed the fee structure for Plan Commission applications in order to look at whether or not these fees are sufficient to cover costs. Currently, the fees, which are $250 for most development proposals, and we feel that these this fee structure does not cover our staff and third-party costs. As Mr. Unch has already indicated, the fees were last set in 1990 and have not been adjusted at all over the past 23 years. In part, this is because the city has had a desire to keep costs low for local businesses and to encourage new development. First, we'll review staff costs. It's been estimated that cost for staff is about $48 per hour. This includes wages, benefits, and overhead. Staff performs a wide variety of services for Plan Commission requests, including the review of the request by a 14-member development staff team, which is comprised of individuals from the Police Department, Fire Department, Public Works Department, Planning and Building Divisions of the Community Development Department, Economic Development Department, and Administrative Services. In addition to the review, there are a number of tasks in which are performed by staff to properly process the application, as illustrated by the four-page checklist on the PowerPoint. Staff does not track time for each specific case. However, given the cost of $48 per hour, staff would exhaust the $250 fee in about 5 hours worth of work. Given the review by the 14-member development staff team and the time spent by staff processing the request, we feel that more than 5 hours of staff time is used on each request. In addition to staff time, the $250 application fee is designed to also cover third-party costs. Third-party costs include Celeste Whiteland for preparation of Plan Commission meeting minutes, Sontag Reporting Services for public hearing court reporter transcripts, Daily Herald or the Kane County Chronicle for publication of legal notices. In addition, we have stormwater review by Willsburg Kelsey and legal services from Charles Radovich. Those already have a deposit requirement in place, those two third-party costs. And also, currently, the onus for recording documents with the county is on the applicant. However, there's been some issues with the applicant not necessarily getting those documents properly recorded, and staff has had to spend staff time ensuring that those are completed. So staff has discussed the possibility of taking that burden on themselves for staff to record the documents with the county. If that were to occur, that would be an additional third-party cost that this fee would have to cover. Staff has reviewed the impact of the third-party costs for minutes, transcripts, and legal notices since the beginning of the fiscal year 2010-2011. Cases that do not require a public hearing do not require transcripts or the publication of a legal notice. They have a significantly lower third-party cost, only about, on average, $65. However, the cases that do require a public hearing have much higher costs. The total, the average for these cases is $494.65, which is almost double the application fee. When we look at all of the applications that we've had over the past 3 years in the totality since 2010, and we compare the revenue generated from the application fee with our third-party expenditures, over this three-year period, we can see that the city has lost almost $5,000. Staff has also compared our plan commission fees with those of neighboring communities. We'll only review two examples of different requests tonight, but in your packet, I go through all of the different requests. So first we have map amendments, Geneva, which is in green. Our map amendment fee is $250. We are the second lowest out of these other 16 communities. The average fee, which is $501, you can see is in red. We'll also look at special use requests. Again, Geneva's fee, $250, is in green. The average fee is $574, and that is in red. I would like to note for both of these requests that some of the communities have additional fees or deposit requirements on top of their base application fee. So, for example, Lombard, North Aurora, St. Charles, Wheaton, Woodridge all require additional fees or deposits to cover third-party costs beyond the space fee. In our city code, in the City of Geneva code, plan commission application fees are actually found in two different sections of the code. First, in Title 11, which is the zoning ordinance. Title 11 states that the city council can establish a non-refundable fee established from time to time. However, annexation requests and subdivisions are in our Title 12 subdivision regulations. With those fees, they are specifically set. The specific dollar amount is set in the code, so it requires a public hearing before the Plan Commission for a text amendment to change those fees. So our recommendation that as staff that we have developed to cover our staff costs and our third-party costs is a raise the fee to $500. This would cover two staff reviews, which is what our current system is designed to allow, two reviews for a project. If there is an additional review that's required, that would require additional staff costs, so we fill an additional $100 for those additional reviews. In addition, we recommend establishing a $500 deposit to cover our third-party costs. If the third-party costs were to exceed $500, the application would be placed on hold until it is paid. And then, as was stated in the previous slide, annexation requests and subdivision requests in Title 12 have the specific dollar amount explicitly mentioned in the city code. So the recommendation is to have the text amendment to remove these explicit references and use the same language that's found in Title 11, that a non-refundable fee can be established from time to time by the city council. So to summarize it, this chart has a comparison of what our fees currently are compared to what our recommendation is. In addition, just to clarify, there are sort of two requests that we have here tonight. There's a draft ordinance in the packet that would raise the fees as recommended for the requests that are in Title 11 in the zoning ordinance. In addition, we're requesting permission to hold a public hearing before the Plan Commission to pursue a text amendment for the to make the changes to the subdivision regulations, to remove the explicit fee references, and allow the council to set fees for subdivisions and annexations in the future without having a text amendment and public hearing. Thank you. Any questions?
Alderman Singer.
Yes, thank you. my being left with the impression that you're setting a certain standards as and what the fees will be to those standards. I'm wondering that some of the communities have what is called a bill for costs.
Yes.
Why couldn't we go in that direction?
We could go that route for the third-party costs. You could also do that. Some communities, they do track staff time specifically for a case. So staff spent X amount of hours on a specific project, and you can bill for that. That's just a decision staff has made. The staff does not track staff costs, staff time for each project. And with the third-party costs, some communities have the deposit. Others will directly bill the applicant for the specific item, say if it's for the legal notice. I think we feel that it's just a little easier to have the deposit, to just debit the deposit rather than track down an applicant as the process is already in motion.
I think it would be a more equitable manner if we went with that process of billing for costs rather than, that's my feeling, I don't know. Mr. Runch, what's your...
My only comment would be that in terms of billing for costs, if you're looking at staff time, the actual time it takes to track those hours, mm-hmm. basically you'd be setting up billable hours for each employee. That's just a record-keeping nightmare. And I happen to have worked for another municipality that did that. And it, I think it overcomplicates the situation. The one thing that we found in going through the analysis on time spent, it obviously varies. But I can tell you that from the standpoint of what we do on the front end of the process, the 8 weeks between an applicant's submittal and a potential meeting date of the plan commission for public hearing, during that time, there is often, if not daily, every other day conversation with an applicant on a given aspect of the project. It could be detail on some design aspect that might involve engineering, it might not. It might involve a zoning compliance issue, debate over a particular standard and how it's applied to a particular property. It gets into the details of the actual review of the site plan for the project. And, you know, we talked, Mark mentioned, you know, the 5 hours of staff review time. That five-hour time can almost be consumed on some projects on the very first meeting that we have with the applicant. So we, you know, and the one thing I wanted to mention here, kind of related to this, I think there could be a little bit of a difference in the times that we're in right now. Mm-hmm. 1990, economy was booming. The city was in a development mode and very high level of construction activity. And I believe that the city was trying to achieve some goals, and still is certainly, but back then just getting started in some major commercial development initiatives, particularly Randall Road. And so the focus was on to almost subsidize the development review process and those costs. I think it's a little bit of a different time that we're in right now, and I think the responsible thing to do is to at least put on the table for discussion the principle of really looking at recouping costs that we have when we're reviewing projects so that the citizens are not bearing the cost of an individual private property owner applicant submitting his request for a special use. I think there's some merit to at least considering that. And that's why we've really brought this forward, because it seems like other communities have taken that same posture to really look at the development review process as a process where staff is devoting staff time to that particular property, that particular proposal, and really it should be pay-as-you-go kind of a scenario. With respect to deposits charge for services rendered, we have many instances where we get involved in delinquent or just folks that won't pay the bill if we pass the bill on to them. And sometimes that's occurring after the project has been approved, so the incentive has been lost for them to actually pay the bill, pay the invoice. I think as a, from my standpoint as a manager, it just makes good sense to have that deposit on file and to debit it as those costs come in.
Now, permit fees are totally
those are separate.
Not engaged.
Those are the building permit fees are separate. These are only plan commission related fees.
Okay.
Plan commission review.
Do you feel comfortable with the possibility, I mean, concerns that there could be someone coming in and seeing that these fees are somewhat excessive of what they feel comfortable with and might just reject wanting to come into the community?
I don't see that. I've had some applicants snicker at our development review fees, particularly the commercial applicants, saying, sure, no problem. Mm-hmm. You know, they're investing thousands of dollars in experts to appear before the plan commission. So I really think that I think that these fees, as Mark has recommended here, are reasonable. They're justified certainly based on the staff time spent on projects, certainly justified in terms of the deposit amount, certainly justified in terms of the actual costs we're incurring.
Mark, a personal question. Was this part of your master's dissertation?
No, it was not.
Oh, interesting. Well, congratulations, by the way, on achieving that distinction of being a master.
Thank you.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Flanagan and then Cummings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question. When you talk about a deposit, and if you don't use that deposit, is it refundable?
Yes.
Thank you.
Alderman Cummings.
My question, about five slides back, you had a slide that showed one cost for at $50 or $65 and another cost for $400 and something. Mm-hmm. What's the occurrence of the no public hearing? And what's the occurrence of the public hearing required? And if, you know, obviously, if we had 100 no public hearing and one incidence of public hearing, then it's probably not fair to say that we're often running over our costs.
Yeah, and also to clarify, because I did kind of skip over, the $500 deposit would only be for those requests that required the public hearing, so that if you had an application request for a site plan review, does not require a public hearing, there would not be the $500 deposit. In the report in the packet, Exhibit A, I have the specific cases that have occurred over the last three fiscal years. We have not had a single case this year that did not require a public hearing. Last year there were four, it looked like. So it might vary based on the year, but this past fiscal year we did not have any.
My follow-up would be, if I lean in favor of a usage of a tax on the external costs, but I worry that the city of Geneva levies a geo tax to pay for the salaries of the city staff, and if we put in a usage tax and we don't reduce, on the other hand, the tax that we're levying to the citizens, essentially we've raised taxes. If the staff is here full-time and making a salary and we're paying through geo taxes, how do we justify also charging a usage tax on that person's salary or on that person's time when they're already getting compensated through geo taxes?
Excellent question. I don't know if you want to handle
that one.
Yeah,
I can comment on it. Because the staff is involved in many other aspects of departmental work besides case review. Case review is one aspect of the staff's work. So in terms of justification, it really, you have to go through the job descriptions of every staff person. You can see the broad range of work that's going on beyond the cases. That's the justification.
If I may, I might also add that the tax levy does not fully fund total salaries. They're funded by the tax levy, by sales tax, by property tax, by all of the different taxes. And I don't have that breakout off the top of my head, but it's a very small amount that actually comes from the tax levy.
Mark, you did an admirable job.
Do you have any follow-up on that?
Very good presentation as well.
What would be an argument against covering external costs through an increased usage tax? And again, going back to the taxes in one form or another, existing taxes already supporting the salary of the staff, splitting this up. I just worry again about duplication of taxes.
I want to make sure I understand your when you say usage tax.
Usage tax for Radovich, usage tax for meeting minutes, usage tax
as opposed to a deposit and
Exactly.
I guess I don't know enough about that kind of a system to really comment. I think in the broader magnitude of total cost for, say, Attorney Radovich's services in legal, probably the amount that he actually bills us for development-related items might be very small in relation to the totality of everything that he's doing for the city. So parsing that out might be probably
another way to ask it is of the $494.65 involved in a public hearing, how much of that is staff time and how much of it is third-party cost?
That's all third-party.
Meeting minutes, transcripts, and publication of legal notices.
There's no staff time there.
You have any further questions?
No, thank you.
Alderman Brown?
Thank you. I think Alderman Cummings' question was a segue into the point I'd like to make, which is there's a tension here between user fee and support by the general public through sales tax, motor fuel tax, property tax, it doesn't matter. And there's a question of how much the general public wants to encourage Geneva, people in Geneva want to come here and look forward, create the community of the future, which is what this is all about. And there's a tension. And at some level, we have been for the last 23 years subsidizing people who have come forward. And in most cases, I think they've done wonderful things for our community. And the fact that the general taxpayer has subsidized them at some level, I don't see that as a big problem. And I don't feel that's – I've been on the council all the time. I don't feel that as something that we've done wrong. I believe even at the current levels you're suggesting, we're probably subsidizing them at some level, because there is just innumerable small phone calls of 30 seconds here and 5 minutes there, et cetera, and people meeting people in corridors, and et cetera, that even a good lawyer has trouble keeping track of every minute, although they manage to do it somehow. So I think that even at the level we're talking about, we are probably, there's still some citizen subsidy involved, and the rest of it is user fee. And it's this tension which will always occur between the city as a whole deciding it wants to spend money to look forward to the future and charging people fees for the actual work that they have engendered in the city. And although I could quibble possibly on maybe we want to be a little bit, I would go towards maybe a little bit more subsidy and maybe drop it to 450 or 400. I cannot fault the work that our intern has done. I think that it sounds the system they've come up with, which is a $500, which probably almost covers it, but probably not quite when you really look into all the details. And putting up the deposit, which can be refunded if the external costs don't come up to the $500, I think that's a reasonable compromise, and I'm certainly in favor of this, and I will vote to move it on to the council. Thank you.
Alderman Bruno.
I can pass my time on. Alderman Brown has covered my point well.
Mayor Burns.
Mr. Herman, the presentation you made, and I think I know the answer to this, does not cover meetings prior to a formal application for a hearing to the Plan Commission.
That's correct.
And there are numerous examples of would-be developers who will meet with staff time and again and then choose either A, not to proceed, or B, ultimately proceed when, in fact, a half a dozen plus meetings have already taken place. So it's the fee doesn't kick in until that formal application is made.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's included in how we subsidize these people who want to come forward and
help
us improve our community.
I agree. And I think it speaks to the availability of the staff as well. I mean, my gosh. I think we've all been involved in those kind of meetings, too, where there's been countless discussions and just doesn't go ahead.
I just want to make a comment that was very, that was really a good point to bring up, because I don't think that we realize all the pre-work that has to be done, too, so.
Okay. Any other aldermen would like to speak to this? Anyone in the audience that would like to speak to this topic? Okay, we have a motion and a second. And to summarize, staff recommends raising the application fee for reviews pertaining to the Title 11 to $500 and establishing an additional $500 deposit. The $500 fee would cover two staff reviews with an additional $100 fee to be charged for each subsequent review if necessary. The $500 deposit is to cover the cost of the third-party services for applications that require a public hearing. In addition, staff is requesting authorization to conduct a public hearing to amend Title 12 of the Geneva City Code to eliminate explicit fee references and allow the City Council to establish a fee for subdivisions and annexations without future text amendments. So essentially that's what we're going to vote on then at this time. I think we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? 9-0. Thank you. This brings us to item N. Recommend draft ordinance allowing a special use at 227 East Side Drive to allow for continued use and expansion of church in R2 medium density single family residential district. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Moved by Singer. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Maladra. Okay.
Just a few brief comments.
Mr. Unch?
We've got members of the public here this evening that would like to speak to this issue, I believe. But just to underscore that last month the Plan Commission did recommend approval of the special use in a hearing for the proposed changes on the property involving this addition to the or demolition and new construction at the church. Also wanted to point out that last week on the 22nd, the Zoning Board of Appeals considered a variation request submitted by the church for a change in the maximum lot coverage requirement in the R2 zoning district. That requirement is at 40% maximum lot coverage of the lot, and that's all hard surfaces, pavement, sidewalk, that type of thing. The increase that was requested is to increase it 1.8%, and the Zoning Board of Appeals, after hearing, did approve that variation request and made its finding of fact. Other than that, I'm available for questions, and I believe members of the audience are here as well.
Okay. We'll let the alderman speak first. Alderman Brown?
Simple question. These people did pay their $250 fee?
Yes, they did.
Second question. The alderman in that ward, I believe there would be no police, and I can imagine where the adjacent homeowners might have some interest in this, but I would ask the alderman from that ward if there's been, and there's something like six or seven adjacent homes, is that correct?
There's a group of them, yeah, to the north of the property, correct.
Were any of those people present or expressed concern of any kind?
Well, at the Plan Commission hearing on the special use request, there were no objectors present for that public hearing. At the Zoning Board of Appeals public hearing, there was one gentleman, Mr. Mayor, who's here this evening, that expressed some concerns.
I hope the chair will ask him if he wishes
sure,
to
absolutely.
Come. Certainly. Thank you.
Thank you. Alderman Bruno.
excuse me, Director Runch. There's beyond that 1-point-some percent lot coverage, there were, if you could recap at the noncompliance issue, there's more noncompliance with this property, is there not, with the R2? No, maybe.
No, there really isn't. None that I'm aware of.
Okay. During the deliberations, was there any special consideration given to this property because it's a religious institution, or would the recommendation by the Plan Commission have been the same whether it was a religious institution or not religious institution?
The Planning Commission's fact-finding, they looked at the 9 special use standards as they would in any other commercial project. A commercial project is typically, or any other special use, actually. Most often it's commercial projects. They made their fact-finding on the 9 standards and made their recommendation.
Okay, I just didn't want to, I wanted to make sure there was no special preference. Thank you.
Okay. To speak to Mr. Brown's comments, I attended the first hearing that was on April 11th, and there was some good discussion. There were obviously some good questions asked by the Plan Commission. There wasn't anyone in the audience that expressed any objection at that point in time, and then it was revisited again because of the issue that Mr. Unch outlined. I did receive an email. Alderman Vogelsberg and I received an email today from Mr. Mayor. I see that he's with us this evening, and I see that we also have representatives from Fox Valley Presbyterian Church. So I guess unless – are there any aldermen that would like to speak at this point? If not, I guess I would ask Mr. Mayor if you would come forward and introduce yourself, your address, and I know that you took some time, drafted a fairly lengthy memo here in regard to some of your concerns, and I think this would be a good opportunity for you to express those concerns, and we'll give Fox Valley Presbyterian an opportunity to comment as well after you're finished.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Andrew Mayer, last name spelled M-A-Y-E-R. I reside at 832 Long Meadow Drive. As the chairman indicated, I did submit, and I believe I copied all of you on a memo about my concerns about the expansion of the property, so I don't think I'll bore you too much with the details and the facts since they're in the written record. The basic case is thus. There are now 2 churches operating where there was previously 1. And to answer your question from earlier when you responded to my email, I'm just aware of this situation now. That's why I wasn't at the earlier meetings. And there actually was someone else, to correct the record. There was another party here at the last meeting who was concerned about the removal of trees. And I've spoken to them, and they're still concerned about it, but they couldn't be here tonight. There are now 2 churches operating where there was once 1. In a residentially zoned area. If I move out of my house, I can rent it. So can you. All of you can. I have to move out of my house first to do that. I cannot rent to another family and move them in and use and encumber my neighbors with additional traffic, additional noise, comings and goings. That is essentially what my neighbors have done to me. And to answer another one of your questions, my property and one other are uniquely situated compared to the other residents of Long Meadow. Because of the cul-de-sac on Long Meadow, my property backs up almost immediately to the back of my deck is almost 10 feet from the lot line. The rest of my neighbors all have a considerable setback from the lot. The other neighbor, who is also actually more impacted by a lot of the goings-on at the church, is a house in foreclosure, and they were unable to sell their house in a short sale and now have gone to auction and now is on the market again. We shall see how that affects their property values because there's a lot going on there, and you can see and you can tell. And I've had personal moments in my backyard interrupted with large gatherings in the church area. And as I indicated in my memo, I've lived at that property first. I was born in that house. I bought the house in 2006 from my parents. There may not be a person in Geneva who knows that part of the world better. My mother, but she's now losing her memory. I was actually confirmed as a member of that church. My parents are still members of that church. That's why this is extra hard today to come before you and register my concerns and complaints about an organization I was once an active, very active part of. And their use has dramatically impacted my quiet enjoyment, which is, I believe, the legal phrase of my property. As I indicated, I've had instances where I've been in my backyard. Just last weekend, we had a situation where I was back there with my wife and my newborn child on a blanket in our backyard enjoying a quiet moment, and all of a sudden, a group of young children came up and started just banging away at the fence, banging away with their sticks and guns and whatnot, and raising generally a racket. There was no adult supervision. There was nothing there. So my concern here is that the expansion is, and another reason why, when I first saw the letters, oh, the church wants to add a little square footage. Big deal. It is a big deal, and that if they're going to start renting out and they're going to start growing their membership by rental, not by getting new congregants, then they're going to use that space. And what's to stop them from using that space for other commercial-like businesses? What's to stop them from running additional services out of there? They already run a daycare out of there. I probably would have objected to that if I had owned the property at the time that that daycare variance was approved. They did install a park, a very large playground installment, right near my property for the use of that daycare and for lots of uses. The city didn't think too much of the objections at the time because they said, well, it's residential and it meets the residential requirements. But it's not a residential park. By that logic, I could go and build a roller coaster in my backyard, and as long as it doesn't get within 5 feet of the lot line, I'm okay. And as long as I don't charge admission, I'm okay. I don't think so. This park is big. There's multiple components to it. I believe that the proper zoning requirements for that park should have been a public park. And the public park requirements are 50 feet from anyone's back lot line. This does not even come close. And it's not from the center of the park either. It's from the boundaries of the play area where the children naturally flow to. I have children at my fence, I won't say daily, but certainly weekly, playing, running along, which brings us to another point about the removal of the trees and moving closer to the lot line with the building, which I didn't even think of until recently. That will push the children who do play along that avenue through the trees even closer. They will have to pass through the trees in order to pass through that part of the world. As I said, I did grow up there. And I can confirm that all the children in that area use that whole property to cut through. They cut through it to go to Harrison Street School. Okay, the kids from the apartment buildings, they all cut through there. When you build right up to the lot line and you put a building and make it, they're going to start cutting through people's yards. They're going to start getting right up to their fences. I don't think we want to encourage that. I think there are things the church could do that would satisfy a lot of the neighbors. For one, they could build a fence and secure their property better, stop those little kids from using the property as a cut-through, stop the teenagers too, stop the adults. Just again, 2 weeks ago, I had a middle-aged couple walk within 5 feet of my fence line, my back fence line. Now, we're not talking about front yards. We're talking about a very private area of your homes. Spread out a blanket and proceed to have themselves a three-hour picnic. I have photographs of it. I'd be glad to show you all after the meeting. The audacity of that is pretty stunning, that people would walk up to someone's backyard and just think, this looks like a wonderful place for a picnic. And it's mostly because the church's property is not secure. Anyone at any time can walk in there, and that park leads to an impression of a public space. Drive by it. Notice it next time you do. I encourage you to. In fact, if any of you want to come by, I'd be glad to show you this space. It looks public. You can see it from 38. You can see it from East Side Drive. It's a very inviting place. It naturally draws people in. I have people who I see out there all the time. They walk out there, and I notice them sitting there, and I don't think much of it. And I notice them walking away. They're not walking back to the church. They're walking over to the Aldi. They were either on a break, or they were there enjoying a moment, waiting for mom to finish grocery shopping, which I've seen a couple times. this is intolerable. I should not have to tolerate. And again, to answer your question, my other neighbors are not affected this way. If you come by, you'll notice my yard occupies most of the frontage that faces the open area, which is the only thing we're really talking about here. That's where conflict happens. That's where friction happens, is the open areas. When the people disgorge when they're in the building, I don't know they're there. It's quiet, it's nice, it's fine. When they're in the open areas, that's when I know they're there. That's when I can hear their noise. My other neighbors don't suffer that. Only my neighbor, the one that's in foreclosure, and myself have that misfortune right now. I would ask that the city reject this motion. And first of all, another point, too, is that Mr. Unsch was unaware of some of these factors when he did his approvals. I would ask the city, ask Mr. Unsch to go back and look at some of these variables. Look at the parking in light of this other congregation that's using this property. Look at the noise. Consider the impact on neighbors now that he's aware of it. And then let's rehear this. And let's see if maybe the church can come up with some ways to, first of all, control their tenant or evict their tenant, which would be my preference. But barring that, obviously there's a legal document I'm sure involved, for them to control and modify their behavior. Because so far they've been, and as I indicated in my memo, they've been great neighbors up until about 4 years ago. Now, not so much. So I would like them to maybe sit down and put their congregation heads together and figure out a way to make peace with their neighbors and make it right. Because the way it is, it's not right. Thank you.
I had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Have you had any direct communication with the church in regard to your concerns previously, or is this really more or less a point where you're looking for resolution through this process? I mean, had you approached any of the church leadership as it relates to your concerns about some of these things?
When they installed the playground equipment 2-3 years ago, I expressed a lot of concerns. And there was some accommodations made. I still told the church that I thought that what they were doing was wrong, that the accommodations would not be sufficient, and that time would prove my concerns about the attractive nuisance nature of that playground correct. They have. My concerns have been fully met. I was more or less grinning and bearing it, though, until this spring when the noise factor went off the charts. I mean, just completely off the charts. For one thing, the daycare is noisy, but they're there during Monday through Friday when I'm not using my backyard. This other congregation is there on Sunday afternoon, and sometimes I think they were there a couple Saturday nights ago. That's conflict. Like I said, this is about friction, about neighborly friction. And yes, I've expressed my concerns about the playground. This is too new, though. And I did express my concerns at the meeting, and the church was in attendance, and there's been no reaching out since then.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would recommend that there be a motion and a second to enter into the record Mr. Mayer's email correspondence dated today, as he referenced that it was part of the public record, but it is not formally yet. So I think a motion would do that so that the minutes of this meeting include your email correspondence.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Bruno, seconded by Flanagan. And I can provide you with a copy of the memo. Okay, you've got it. Okay, great. Those in favor? Discussion? Let's take action on that first. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, it'll be added to the public record then. Mr. Bruno, you had a question of Mr. Mayer?
I had a question of Director Unsch. One of the points that stuck with me is the multiple tenant aspect of the property, and I think maybe that's where I was thinking there were some other compliance, because this is zone R2, right? But we're permitting this non-residential use. So if you could speak to how that second or multi-tenant aspect is viewed by code enforcement.
OK. Okay. Well, first off, the church is allowed as a special use, so it's not a permitted use. It's allowed by special use, and that's what the church is applying for. Back in 1995, when the comprehensive zoning of the city was done and the zoning ordinance was and map were totally revised, the text of the zoning ordinance allowed churches by special use. But when that map, overall zoning map, was prepared, the special use was not assigned at that time. So in effect, we're going back a little bit and reestablishing, or I guess establishing a legal conforming use of the property. The church is endeavoring to do that through the special use request that's before you. As far as this new use, a second congregation that's actually using the space, the land use compatibility issues presented by Mr. Mayor, the use and enjoyment of his property, and really the nature of what appears to be a conflict there, the special use process. This consideration is designed to address any potential conflicts and to place reasonable conditions on property if, in fact, they're required to address conflicts, to mitigate any conflict that might be present by the be presented by the proposal. So when it comes down to whether it's one congregation as an organization using the space or five, the real question is, how is the property being used? And is it being used in a way that's compatible with the surrounding area? Oftentimes, in special use considerations, limitations on hours of operation are a part of a reasonable condition that could be tied to the special use. Fencing, berming, buffering can be done to mitigate the effects of one use on another. You can actually get quite creative in terms of the conditions that you would decide to place on the property as long as they're viewed as being reasonable. So this is all food for thought, I guess, in this process.
So to your knowledge, there's nothing that specifically addresses this type of land use renting out to a second.
Yeah, the fact that the church has chosen to rent space here, it isn't directly limited by village code or ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
But it could be.
I'm sure our code is not very careful in defining what a church is.
I think you'd have to refer to the Webster's Dictionary on that.
We know the difference between a turkey farm and a church, but
right,
we don't
exactly
know the difference between a church and a multi-congregation church. Yes.
Right.
Alderman Maladra.
So these conditions that you just mentioned about hours of operation and berming and things like that, those are all things that are in play, but do we have to have that defined and settled before we move on this? How does
the Plan Commission has made its fact findings, made its recommendation. If it was the pleasure of the council to add conditions to a special use that it would choose to grant, that's one approach. Of course, you can choose to deny the request also. Or you can choose to approve it as is without conditions.
Okay. So then also, and this is kind of for you too, Mr. Mayor, so one of the things that I'm stuck with, and maybe we'll figure it out before the discussion's done, everything that you just talked about is happening now. It's not clear to me how this proposal changes any of that. It's, if they do this, you're going to have the problems you just described. If they don't do this, you're going to have the problems that you just described.
It's a matter of amplification. You're adding square footage. You're giving them more ammunition. You're giving them more space to use. Now they can rent out to yet another group. There's no limit to this is the problem. If you guys do not, if this committee does not put a limit on this,
has some conditions.
There is no limit on their behavior except their own, whatever they wish to impose upon themselves, and their behavior has shown that they do not wish to impose limits. I'm not aware of other churches in town because I don't live next to all of them, but I doubt this is common, and I doubt I don't think it's also necessary. There's no shortage of available square footage in this part of the world. There's lots of vacant buildings that any church could have for a song. My point is that any addition is giving them room to expand, room to grow their twin congregations. One congregation is enough. Two is too many. 2.5 is way, way too many. So that's my basic reason why I do not support this, or why I'm opposing this expansion, is I feel it's a matter of amplification of existing problems. It's fuel on a fire.
Okay, so I understand that it gives them fuel on the fire, but in the Plan Commission finding of fact, it says the seating capacity of the church would not be increased, nor is an increase in preschool enrollment expected. So where does the increase come?
Well, they found a clever way to increase the size of their sanctuary, haven't they?
Yeah.
It's kind of a Weasley way around it, isn't it? They have said they're not going to increase the size of their sanctuary, but they've increased it. They've doubled it, or however much this other group is. I'm not aware of their exact numbers, but it seems like a large number. There's far more, I'll say this, there's far more of this other congregation that uses the outdoor areas than the existing congregation does. The existing congregation, like I said, I know this area. I know it well. When the Presbyterian Church is done with their services, there is a brief flurry of activity, which is over in no more than 10 or 15 minutes, which is perfectly tolerable. Nothing wrong with that at all. I've lived next to it my whole life. The use that is going on now is much different in character and duration and noise and all variables. So, yes, there's an amplification here. And so they have more square footage to work with.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor, for coming this evening and expressing your concerns. Representatives of Fox Valley Presbyterian Church, would anyone care to speak to this topic? Anything that you might be able to add?
I'm Bart Roush. I'm one of the pastors of Fox Valley Presbyterian Church, R-O-U-S-H. That's the last name. I would address a few concerns that Mr. Mayor brought up. In the proposed plan, there is an addition of a number of trees along the north side of the property that will provide for additional screening. That is part of the requirement of the city as we remove some of the trees on some parts of the property to replace them. We're actually replacing them with, it's not tree for tree, but it's width, and so we're actually putting more trees onto the property than we're taking away. So we anticipate that those will flourish and provide some natural screening for that north side of the property, specifically along his property as well and some of the other neighbors. We're very interested in being good neighbors to all of our neighbors. And so, indeed, when Mr. Mayor had concerns a few years back when we built the playground, we tried to address those with him. We worked with him extensively. We, in fact, added more trees along his property line. If you look at our plan, we actually believe that the edge of the playground, is more than 50 feet away from the back end of the property line. It's a little bit less than, I don't know, Blake, if you can put that picture up if we have it. But the playground itself starts, or the mulch starts further south of the existing property of the building line, and that building line is a little bit more than 50 feet from the back north side of the property line. We do have a Hispanic congregation now worshiping with us at the church. Over the course of the last, I'll just show you, so I don't have a pointer. There you go. Thank you. So from this edge of the building to the back property line is a little more than 50 feet. The playground is here, which is south of that back edge of the building. as to the Hispanic congregation, about 4 years ago, we entered into a discernment process and strategic planning process. And as part of that process, we gathered a lot of demographic information about the community, a surrounding community around us. And one of the things we learned in that process is while as a percentage of population as the whole, the Hispanic and Latino community is about 5 to 7% of Geneva, it's increasing. And the majority of that population is centered around our church. So we found a great opportunity to reach out to that community. And then we're presented with the opportunity to host this other congregation. It's actually quite a common model for churches, for many Protestant churches and some Catholic churches, but for Protestant churches to host ethnic congregations that can't afford their own space. It's a way in which to seed new churches. Often what happens is that they're there for a period of time, and then once they grow, they move on. I don't know that that's what will happen with this congregation, but it could. But that wouldn't necessarily prevent us from looking for that opportunity again to service a particular part of the Geneva population. And so that church initially when they started was about 50 members, and now it's about 200. So it has grown, but we see that as a very good thing because it's also helping some of the Geneva residents in the area and our neighbors. Think anything you would add, Blake? So again, we're very interested in working with all of our neighbors. We want to be hospitable to all of our neighbors, which would include we want the space and our property to be inviting. We like it when people come and check us out because that means that we're doing what it is that we're supposed to be doing. So thank you.
There may be some questions. Alderman Singer?
Yes, thank you. The congregation that you're sharing your church with, is there a lease agreement with these?
We do have an agreement with them. We also meet with them about once every 2 months formally, and then we have informal conversations to make sure that we're reviewing any issues with them. They use on a Sunday. We are typically at the church from maybe 7:30 or 8 a.m., until about maybe noon. Sometimes we extend over into that. The Hispanic, Fruto de Vida is their name, they come in somewhere around noon to 1 is when their services start. Their services typically end about 3:30, and then our youth group comes in at 4:30. So the building is active all day on Sunday.
How long have you been present in that congregation in your facility?
The original sanctuary was built in 1952.
And how long has this other congregation been present?
They've been with us for 1 year.
I'm sorry?
For 1 year, for the last year.
For a year.
Yeah.
And you expect they're going to be there continually, or are they anticipating looking for another location?
We haven't talked about that. They have said that they would like to live with us through construction and continue on with us for the foreseeable future. I don't know what their long-range plan is, but to some extent, the amount of time that they're able to be in the building is also limited by when we're in the building. So there is a limit to a certain amount. I mean, in the same way that we provide space for them, we do that for the Scouts, we do that for AA, we do it for other outside groups because we're trying to, again, be hospitable to many groups and many neighbors. But at this point, we haven't talked about with them what their long-term plan is at this point.
Is your facility used for any other means, social activities of any sort? Your congregation and the other congregation?
We have not partnered with them on anything jointly. We do also have a monthly community dinner, a free community dinner, where anyone from the community is welcome to that. That's on the fourth Friday. You all can come. Although we're moving, while we're under construction, moving that down to the Salvation Army during construction, but we'll, again, do that when we come back. We have an outside music ensemble that uses our sanctuary.
Orion
Ensemble, maybe 5 or 6 times a year. We've had a children's youth Christian youth theater group that has used the church for a week every summer to put on a theater camp. So a number of activities like that.
I know the church, but I don't know that much about it. Do you have an educational structure within this? Other than, do you have probably a Sunday school?
We have a Sunday school, and that's predominantly the area that we're replacing. So we're knocking down this kind of space here to here. This is our fellowship hall here, and this is all our education wing. We're knocking that down and moving it north and south. And so part of the impetus for this project is that our own Sunday school program with our own children is simply it has grown and we're out of space. And so we need to expand the size of the classrooms. So we have Sunday school programming for our own kids and some adults on Sundays. And then we also have activities through the week. Both our church and the other church, and then other community groups use the space throughout the week as well.
You don't have an elementary school feel with your school?
We don't have an elementary school, but we have a preschool that operates Monday through Thursday from 9 to 1. And we don't anticipate those hours changing anytime soon.
Thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If you could imagine a solution to this impasse, what would that solution look like?
Yeah. We certainly would can show the landscape plan of the trees, show them the trees. We could talk about security lighting for that end of the property, motion lighting on the playground area. I think we would be happy along the north side of Mr. Mayor's property to build a privacy fence. I think we, in fact, offered that solution last time. Thanks. This is the landscape plan. Along that, so the large circles here are all new plantings of trees. This is a rain garden effect, and plantings of shrubs, and then there are a variety of shrubs along the back as well.
Alderman Flanagan.
Excuse me. What type of trees?
Do you have a?
I don't know if they're full trees or if they're, because if you're going to look for privacy.
Sure.
I don't know how you're going to achieve privacy if they have a.
The trunk and then.
Trunk and then.
There are a number of cedar evergreens already back there, and then these would be an addition to, and I believe they're maple and.
So they aren't cedar.
There you go. Sterling silver linden. I don't know what those are, but sterling silver linden.
Okay. I was just trying to think of another screening kind of situation, rather than just, a tree if you already have evergreens. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the privacy fencing, maybe Mr. Mayor would feel a little bit more comfortable. I don't know what type of solution he's looking for, but in order to compromise or to look for some sort of solution, maybe you want to increase the density in foliage in that area so that you have the inability to cross your property or cross into your property.
Noise gets through just by
anything. I'm sure
it's a real problem. Yeah. It's noise. It's not visual. Visually, it's appealing and beautiful back there. That's part of the issue. It's a pretty area. So it draws people to it, as the pastor said. It's, like I said, it's the noise. It's intolerable at times. It's loud. As I indicated in my email, it's very much like having a small elementary school park right next to your house. And that's not what that area was ever meant to be.
And that's normally between 1 and 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
On Sundays?
Yeah.
And no Sunday evenings?
Sunday evenings are usually...
There is a youth group. I was part of the youth group there that used the grounds. They sometimes come outside and kick around a football or something like that, but it's usually short. And it's the key thing here is it's intermittent. The use I'm objecting to is regular. It's consistent. It's every Sunday. It's not a five times a year orchestra that shows up there. None of those other groups have ever raised any kind of concerns by us before. My only real concerns are the noise that occasionally goes at the playground and the interlopers. As I indicated, when the playground was first built, my concern really wasn't the church. I know the church. I know they're good people. I know that they would never do anything to hurt me or my family or our property. My concern is the people that aren't the church, and there's been a lot of them. You know, my primary objective here is not a fence for me. It's a fence for all of that. That's how this property is accessible. When you go and look at this property, and I'm sure you probably all will in the coming days, think about how open that property is. People can just walk in, and believe me, they do. And part of the problem is, if you'll notice from the layout here, the church's offices are way over here. This is where the supervise and control functions of the church property exist, our main building here, not the sanctuary, not the great hall. The activity is happening way over here. There's no way they can see and monitor what's going on there. As I've indicated, there's people there all hours of the day, and I don't know if they belong to the church or if they're strangers. Sometimes I can tell. Sometimes they give themselves away. But for the most part, I don't know if I should be calling the cops or, you know, saying hello. It's a very difficult situation, and I think the best thing the church could do is, I'm sure this is a very large project, is to find the money in that project to build themselves a security fence around their property, as everyone else in the neighborhood has done. That's what I would really like to see here. I would also like to see that the playground have hours posted. For example, this playground is for the use of the preschool, hours 9 to 12, Monday through Thursday. And, with a caveat for Sunday mornings during normal church functions. I think that's a perfectly reasonable sign that should be posted. That way, when I see someone out there who's teenagers, partying, whatever, I can go out there and say, hey, get out of here. Or I can pick up the phone and call the police and say, hey, there's some people out there that shouldn't be there. Those are accommodations that would satisfy me. Trees are nice, and I do appreciate them. They have helped with the visual. But seeing children play isn't offensive. Hearing lots of children play is annoying. So, I mean, the visuals don't matter. And one of the reasons why I didn't want a privacy fence is because it's pretty to look at. You know, why would I want to obstruct my own view just to obstruct a view that I don't object to in the first place? That privacy fence isn't going to stop noise. It's just going to go right over it. So, I mean, I do appreciate the screenings they put up here. I am curious what this jagged line is that on most surveys indicates a fence. Oh, it's a construction fence. Okay. So, yes, there are things that could pacify me, and as I'm sure my neighbor who's not here by reason of foreclosure would also agree that some of these things would help tremendously. I don't object to the church. I move next to the church. I know the church. I object to the people that are coming onto the church's property and the church is unable by their very nature to control because they are a church. There's sometimes nobody there. You know, there are many hours of every week where there is nobody at that property controlling it. I'm the de facto sheriff in town. And I don't have any authority to do anything because it's not my property. But ours would help.
Mayor?
Mr. Chairman, if I may ask Mr. Mayor a question. Is that not true, though, of all school properties in town?
Is not what true?
The fact that they're neighbors of school properties become the de facto sheriff of those properties?
It is, but most of those neighbors are not located directly on that property. There's almost always a street intervening or commercial property of some nature. I struggle to know of a school property in city limits that has houses butting up to the school play areas.
Western Avenue, St. Peter, Williamsburg Elementary, Fabian, and 4th Street School, as well as Heartland.
Yes,
sir.
Backs of houses.
Yes, sir. But you're absolutely right, though.
And it's the play areas we're talking about here. I drove by St. Peter's today.
Yes, sir, the play area.
There was the rectory, and the living spaces are back up to the Pepper
Valley Elementary
houses.
School, the play area abuts the home where I grew up in.
Okay.
And I couldn't afford to buy my. But you're right, though. When there's kids out there at certain hours of the evening, the neighbors do, I think, a pretty admirable job of saying.
And here's another point, too.
It doesn't look right. You know, it's like,
yeah. Elementary schools are Monday through Friday. We're talking about Sunday.
Right.
Sunday is different.
There are public basketball courts on this particular
program. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's an open campus, if you will. So that's why I asked the question, is that not then the same for all school properties?
Police also tend to patrol those areas. I mean, there are differences here. Those are public areas. Those are schools. The police will patrol it. They will say, you don't belong here. This is not a public area either. This is a private area.
Well, I understand. Yes.
Big differences.
Huge difference. Thank you.
I would point out that we have a pretty active presence of the police, though. They're frequently in our parking lot, and they will drive through that. And I would just echo it. That is the nature of, we recognize that we have a public space, and that. But we also, it's part of, I'm sorry, I'm a pastor, I have to say this. There's a lot of theological warrant for welcoming the stranger, and where stranger becomes the friend. And so it's difficult for me to think about ways in which to prevent people coming to the church. While I want to respect our neighbors, I also want to balance that with having an inviting environment.
Sure. I had a question.
Now, you indicated that the second faith community comes at about noon.
Yeah.
And that their service will run till about 1 o'clock. And then you say then that they could be on the premises till 3:30 or 4 o'clock.
The service starts at 1 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
They go a little longer than we do in their worship. It's a little more free-flowing than ours.
Okay.
And so usually they're done by about 3:30 or 4.
Is there any way that could be curtailed? Or I guess I'm just trying to find some type of...
Sure.
A compromise here, or some manner that we can find a way to make it work.
They're not outside during that whole 1 to 4 or 3:30 time.
It sounds as though the playground isn't a problem except on Sunday afternoons. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Mayor? Okay.
And with interlopers.
Right. I know the other issue is that's sort of a separate issue, but the one that seems to be the major issue right now is the every Sunday afternoon this activity.
To answer Alderman Maladra's question from earlier, that is kind of the difference between where I was before. The interlopers has always been there. Mm-hmm. There's nothing this expansion is going to do about that. It's the second congregation that affects this thing. So those are the two separate issues we're grappling with as a community here, and one is definitely impacted by this expansion. The other one is just a constant kind of thorn in the side and should be resolved, and I think would do a lot towards helping improve the feel of security. And mind you, I'm not talking about building a fortress around this church.
Right.
I would note that the East Side Drive entrance should be entirely open, as would I think you could serve this function by tying it off at the east side of Aldi, not going completely up the whole east south end of the property. just the east end of the property, tie it off at Aldi. That would stop a lot of the interloping.
You're referring to some type of a cyclone fence then, maybe?
Well, cyclone fence can be jumped, but a stockade fence along the property would be...
I wouldn't recommend a cyclone fence.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'm trying to find out what your thoughts are on this.
Entering into the property that should not be there.
Okay.
You know, I appreciate the church's role of being a welcoming center, but they need to also keep the unwelcome out.
So are you saying there's no fence between the east side of the church property and the apartment buildings,
yes,
which exist just to the east?
Correct. We would be happy to
build a fence on the east side. So the people from the apartment buildings do use yours as open area then?
Okay. Yes. Okay. There are times, yes, we've seen, yeah, and I think that church would be happy to build a fence on the east side of the property line.
Mr. Simone.
First of all, thank you both. If we don't vote this in, we're going to have two parties that are not going to be happy.
I think it sounds to me it's
very resolvable. And I don't know if we can, but I would recommend we just table this and let maybe the city staff work with the two of them to come to a compromise and then come back and revisit this when both parties can hopefully, because it sounds like they're close to an agreement, agree to terms that makes everybody happy.
My only concern about that is a timeline for us is we're trying to do a certain amount of construction through the summer to ensure that we're able to open aspects of the building for our preschool come September, and by delaying the vote, that would greatly hamper our ability to do that.
Well, the question I have is probably for Dick. I mean, how long would a process like this take?
I think it is important that the exact location of the fence and the type of fence be mutually agreed upon by the parties. I think this council should see that, that solution. You could choose to basically put it in their hands and in staff's hands and make your approval motion subject to that being worked out. It's just that there are all different kinds of fences and there are all different kinds of locations to put the fence, and I'd much rather have it something that the council could look at. But maybe the way to word this would be if you wanted to have the parties come to some mutual agreement with staff input, if it turned out that there were some kind of impasse, it would come back to you. If not, it would move forward, something to that effect.
Well, we automatically see it next week, so we could just approve it tonight contingent on this staff reaching an agreement with the two parties.
That's right. I was going
to say. I believe it is in both parties' interest to move on this as quickly as possible, so I think we've got their consideration.
And formal approval would be coming up next.
So it's a simple change to the motion on the table to approve it contingent upon the staff and the two parties involved coming to some sort of an agreement that could be codified by the time it comes to the council next week.
Are both parties prepared to enter into that type of a discussion with city staff?
Yes.
Okay. Mayor?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Forgive me for asking this question because I'm certain the nature of the question is going to raise eyebrows. Mr. Unch, if we are requiring administrative approval directing administrative approval and both parties come to an agreement, does that not violate the public hearing, which originally did not show a fence? Number one. Number two, if there are neighbors to the east of Aldi living in wherever they live, and all of a sudden they discover there's going to be a 6 or 7 foot fence going up abutting their property line, should they not also have the opportunity to comment on that new horizon?
One question at a time here. First question, City Council has the authority to place conditions and restrictions
Wanted you to state that for the record, but yes.
Property owners have the ability to place certain fences on their property consistent with code requirements. Right. So
the code requirement is a 6 foot maximum height fence.
That is correct.
Just so Mr. Mayor is aware of that.
Depending on what location is discussed and agreeable on the part of the parties, we'd have to look at that location and make sure it's code compliant.
And just for the record, I think it's impressive they've come here and, my God, we've, no pun intended, we've, you know. I am worried, however, that if we receive a complaint from another neighbor, from another school, a similar request will come forward. That's my only concern. But again, I serve at the majority will of the council, so obviously if we want to have a special committee of the whole meeting prior to next week's council meeting, that's fine too, or just jump into the council. So, okay. So I got to ask for another major gift.
Okay, we had a motion by Singer and a second by Maladra on the original recommendation. Would you withdraw those, withdraw your motion second?
You can just add the
conclusion. Yes, I will.
Add.
Seconder to withdraw?
Don, did you, excuse me, Alderman Vogelsberg, you haven't had an opportunity to speak. Is there anything that you'd like to say?
No, thank you. Okay. Chairman,
okay. We can modify it. That would be an amendment then. Let's just withdraw it, and then we'll come back with a new motion then. Okay.
I'll withdraw.
Okay. Is there a motion then? Alderman Brown, I think you phrased it well.
Yes. We approve this to be forwarded to the council with the contingency that we would like staff to make a to present to us what they believe is an adequate resolution of the problem we've seen tonight between the two parties involved. A resolution of the problem we've seen tonight consistent with city code.
Okay. And again, that would apply then to the draft ordinance that we've had a chance to review. Okay, move by Brown.
The COW meeting only recommends that it gets passed forward to the council, and we can do that with a contingency. So,
moved by Brown, seconded by Singer. This would be a recommended draft ordinance allowing a special use at 227 Eastside Drive to allow for continued use and expansion of church in R2 medium density single family residential district with the
contingency as mentioned.
With the contingency as mentioned.
I'm sure Ms. Fornari got it even better than I did.
Is that clear to everyone?
Yes.
Okay. And then again, as the mayor pointed out, we certainly appreciate both Mr. Mayor as well as Fox Valley Presbyterian attending tonight and helping us try to find some type of an acceptable resolution. So with that, we're prepared to vote. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? 9-0. And then we'll revisit this again on June 2nd, Monday.
Right. And just for the record, Mr. Chairman, it's traditional that a unanimous vote of the Committee of the Whole meeting puts this matter on the consent agenda and a council meeting, but this matter will not be on the consent agenda because of the contingency placed on by Alderman Brown. So.
Good. Thank you. Okay. Any new business?
Mr. Chairman?
Alderman Singer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of myself and the American Legion 75, I'd like to thank the mayor and the city council, as well as all the people and citizens of this community, in the manner in which they presented themselves at the Memorial Day Parade. It was just a very memorial and very, very positive kind of an experience for me, being myself a Korean War veteran. I did appreciate all that was done for us and for the people of the community. I can't thank them, but from the bottom of my heart. And a special thanks to the marching bands. They were just absolutely magnificent. The choirs was very, very special. The speakers were just absolutely excellent. The mayor was just phenomenal, as he usually is. And it was very much appreciated. And I really thank all the people of the community that support the needs of our veterans, and the love and consideration that they show for us is very much appreciated. I thank you for that.
Thank you. Anyone else?
And may I add, thank you, and thank you for being a veteran.
I believe I mentioned Monday, June 2nd. Actually, it's Monday, June 3rd. So
Mr.
we'll get
Chairman,
that clarified. Alderman Brown?
I would just like to also, while we're thanking, note to the council that our new pictures taken last week are now on the website. And to thank Mr. Tom Nickel, a friend, a resident of Geneva, a very good friend of myself, who was not only a good engineer at Fermilab, but now I understand he's a very good photographer, too.
Good.
So you can see your beautiful new pictures. He's done a wonderful job with Photoshop. We all look very presentable. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. I believe that...
He was not given credit on the website, so I had to give Tom the credit he deserves.
Any other new business? If not, I believe that concludes our meeting this evening. Those, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, moved by Bruno, seconded by Flanagan. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We stand adjourned. Good night, Don.